It can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
Join Bloomberg in San Francisco or virtually on May 7th for The Future Investor, Data-Powered Transformations. This 2024 event series will examine how data is not only playing a pivotal role in investment decisions, but serves as a driving force behind the construction of innovative, investable enterprises. This series is proudly sponsored by Invesco QQQ. Register at BloombergLive.com/futureinvestor/radio.
Bloomberg Audio Studios.
Podcasts, radio, news.
The story of the UK is an economy that has got real momentum.
What is broken can be repaired. What is ruined can be rebuilt.
UK inflation is becoming much more homegrown.
We have huge potential as an economy in the UK.
This is a time to tell Israel there is a path to peace.
Our plan for the British economy is working, but the work is not done.
You're listening to Bloomberg UK Politics. I'm Ewan Potts.
And I'm Stephen Carroll. Welcome to the programme. Ewan, in the spirit of the word bingo games that we so often like to play when it comes to the subjects that are being discussed in politics at the moment, something that we don't hear quite as much of as we used to, or certainly in years gone by, is the issue of jobs. You know, job creation, unemployment used to be central to political discourse. But at the risk of sounding old, do you remember when unemployment was a thing? It's kind of not anymore.
I do, yeah. Of course, throughout the 80s and 90s, unemployment was a massive issue. It always ranked up there in the top political issues because millions of people didn't have a job. In fact, I was just looking back over the stats, actually. And at the end of the 80s boom, which was the low point of unemployment throughout the 80s and 90s, unemployment was 7%. It's now 4.2%, and this is, you know, after a period of not much economic growth. So that was after a boom, unemployment was 7%, and it was quite common for unemployment to be in double digits. So it was a massive problem, which we just don't really face anymore.
Well, or do we, is the question, because the unemployment rate, although it does give us an idea of who's in work and who's available for work, it does hide perhaps another issue that has come to the fore in political discussion, and that's the idea of people who are unable to work, they're out of work sick. And that's the sort of issue that we want to talk about, because it's been something that the Prime Minister has been bringing up and has shared these plans to curb what he calls sick note culture and to try and reform how exactly this issue of inactivity in the labour force can be tackled.
Yeah, there are 9.2 million people of working age between 16 and 24 in the UK who are not in work or not looking for a job. That does include students as well. But that number is 700,000 higher than before the pandemic. So there are lots more people who are signed off sick than there were just a few years ago. And long-term illness is cited as the main reason for about a third of those people who are inactive in the labour market. So it is a big number, and it's a number which is often sort of hidden from public view, and it's something which politicians on both sides, I think, of the chamber are keen to do something about.
Yeah, indeed. And this is something that we've been tracking as well as part of our broader look at the UK labour market and our partnership with Reed Recruitment, and our figures this morning being reported by our colleague Irina Angell from our economics team. And she's in studio with us now alongside our political editor, Kitty Donaldson. Kitty, we'll come to you for some political analysis on this in just a moment. But Irina, I want to start with what we've actually learned from the data on this. When it comes to the people who are out of work in the UK, what do we know?
Well, we know that, as you said already, Britain has fewer people in the labour market still than it did before the pandemic. And, you know, we have more than 500,000 people who dropped out of work, and many of them haven't returned yet. So, of course, that's created labour shortages and it's pushed up wages as employers have to fight over a smaller and smaller pool of candidates. And now we're seeing, you know, pay pressures as one of the remaining sources of sticky inflation that's really creating problems for the Bank of England.
Feels like we're always getting these back to work plans. I wouldn't like to list all the ones we've had over the years, but this latest one apparently is going to cost £2.5 billion. Does this make financial sense to spend this money?
Well, that remains to be seen. You know, the plan includes measures to support those long-term unemployed and people with significant health conditions, together with much of the advertised tax cuts. But what we know is that the lack of workers is putting a speed limit on how much the economy can grow. And that is a problem this year because the government is trying to encourage sluggish growth in an election year.
One of the other interesting strands from the latest Reid report, Irina, that you've been reporting on has been this question around flexible working, because that's something that's given people that have other, you know, caring responsibilities, for example, the chance to work either remotely or perhaps part-time. But it's something that the employment market seems to be moving around here.
That's right. Data from Reid Recruitment showed that employers are scaling back on job postings that offer flexible schedules. So they're reining in part-time and remote work from the peaks that we've seen during the pandemic. Jobs which mentioned the word flexible are down 4% from 2022 levels after they stagnated close to pre-COVID levels for the last couple of years. And those jobs with flexible hours or part-time jobs are down 40% since 2022. Work from home is also down, even though we're seeing more work from home jobs than in 2019. But what is clear is that there's been a backtracking in these kinds of jobs.
Is it worth the government intervening in this, or should we just kind of leave the labour market to do its job?
Well, employment experts say that flexible jobs are key to luring people back to work. And we've seen, you know, private companies have taken the matter in their own hands. So we've had an example, from insurer Zurich, which started offering all jobs as part-time or flexible schedules in 2019 and has since seen a surge in applications. And we know these jobs particularly benefit women who take on still more of the caretaking responsibilities. But the government still also has an important part to play.
Let's bring in our political editor, Kitty Donaldson, who's been listening in to that analysis from Irina there. Kitty, this is, as I say, it's kind of interesting to see that this is where the government's focusing its attention now, and the idea of the number of people are out of work, this plan regarding sick notes. What is the Prime Minister up to here? What's the strategy?
Think about there's local elections next week, so, and of course general election later in the year. So it's very much about painting a clear divide with Labour. If you think back to the Osborne Cameron era, there was a lot of talk about shirkers versus strivers, and I think we're seeing a bit of a return to that, so that the Prime Minister can kind of try and present himself on the side of kind of, you know, hard-working people versus what he says are the kind of over-medicalised young people who blame anxiety for not going into work.
So it's an attempt at creating one of our old friends, a wedge issue. The trouble for the Tories is that Labour under Starmer have been incredibly adept, haven't they, at dodging wedges. Do you think this is one which Labour will struggle with, or will they manage to kind of get out of it?
Well, I think it depends on whether they win the argument. I think it's actually quite sort of clever psychologically from the Tories, because unless you look drill down into the data, you can sort of see it as part of these kind of culture wars and blaming young people, you know, eating too much avocado and not going to work, rather than what's actually happening, which is, you know, those people who sort of might take a day off occasionally for having a cold but don't go on long-term incapacity benefit. And it's a question of whether you sort of live in an area or in a community that has a lot of those people. But actually, when you drill down, only 1 in 10... The government calls them fit notes. I mean, everyone else calls them sick notes. But only 1 in 10 sick notes are caused by mental health issues. So actually, it's not just, you know, anxiety. And for that reason, I think the Prime Minister is using it as a culture war issue rather than sort of drilling down into exactly what's happening. The other thing I'd say, actually, is that what seems to have happened, and this is anecdotal and borne out by the evidence, is that ADHD, for instance, autism, have been more diagnosed over recent years. Mm. There is more willingness to diagnose, and there's more awareness of the issues. And therefore, in previous generations, perhaps these things were underdiagnosed rather than necessarily people being over-medicalised.
Yeah, I mean, that's a very interesting point that you make. And I wonder, does that mean that it's a bit of a risky political strategy for Rishi Sunak to try and make this an issue that it needs to be tackled, as opposed to perhaps just supporting people who need it?
Absolutely, but I think if you look at where the Tories are in the polls and who they're trying to attract, they're trying to hold on to their base, right? Because a lot of Tory voters are fed up with the Tories. They haven't necessarily decided whether to go over to Labour yet, but they're definitely fed up with the Tories. I was talking to some Tory MPs this week who were saying that they can't get their local associations out to deliver leaflets for the local elections because they're so fed up that the Tory party centrally put Rishi Sunak in place without a vote of the local members. So there's a kind of disconnect there. And these people might just stay at home. And they either stay at home or they vote Reform. And that's a serious worry for the Tories if you're trying to hold on to your base.
It's not a policy without problems, though, is it? Because it does risk alienating perhaps some of those 9 million people. It's a lot of voters. And I feel like it won't be popular with many young people either.
No, I think you're absolutely right. But that's a kind of a calculated risk, I think, that Prime Minister's taking. Whereas, you know, it does make people think about what Labour would do, and the kind of the very old argument that Tories always level at Labour is that they'd spend too much on welfare, and you've seen this also in the defence spending this week. The Tories are trying to, by committing to 2.5% of GDP spending on defence by 2030, the Prime Minister is saying to, it's laying down a gauntlet to Labour, saying, look, you've got to match this, or explain why if you can't match it. And it's another one of those sort of bear traps that that the Tories are setting out for Rachel Reeves.
Well, does it put the Labour Party in a particularly difficult position on this issue, because they can't say that inactivity isn't a problem, but at the same time they want to avoid, you know, adopting a position that's too close to what the Tories are saying.
Yeah, exactly. It is, and also it's the same with Rwanda, right? It's like, well, the Tories are saying you may not like our plan to send migrants to Rwanda, but what's your alternative? And they're saying to Labour or to voters, you know, you may not like our plan to cut back on welfare spending, but what's the alternative, you know?
Post-election, though, I do think that Labour, I'd be interested to get your views on whether Labour will feel the need to carry on with this kind of stuff, because, you know, the Social Security bill is £300 billion. Money is very short. There's plenty of things Labour would like to be spending the cash on. So surely they will need to continue to be tough on welfare claimants.
Yes, but I think you'll see it framed in a different way. I mean, Wes Streeting, the Shadow Health Secretary, basically made the argument that if you bring down waiting lists and you invest in mental health services, then people return to work more quickly than they would have done otherwise. And I think that's probably how Labour will frame it, rather than sort of, you know, the culture war, strivers versus shirkers aspect that the Tories are taking.
I feel like we haven't heard the last of this either. Kitty Donaldson, our political editor, thank you very much for joining us. And Arina and Gail from our economics reporting team too, bringing us the details of that latest data from Reed Recruitment and some of the picture that what employers are talking about, the difficulties in the labour force and the challenges that they're facing as well. That's it from us for today. If you like the programme, don't forget to subscribe and give it 5 stars so other people can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify or wherever you listen.
This episode was produced by Tiwa Adebayo and our audio engineer was Sean Gostomachia. I'm Ewan Potts.
And I'm Stephen Carroll. We'll be back with more tomorrow. This is Bloomberg.
Bloomberg UK politics. Listen weekdays at noon on DAB Digital Radio in London.
From Silicon Valley to Wall Street, the promise and perils of artificial intelligence are playing out on the world stage. But what will the next phase of AI adoption look like? Which companies, from big tech to startups, will dominate? And where do the risks and unintended consequences lie? I'm Emily Chang. Join me at Bloomberg Tech in San Francisco, May 9th, to answer many of the industry's burning questions, alongside Snap's Evan Spiegel, Xbox president Sarah Bond, OpenAI's Brad Lightcap, top researcher Dr. Fei-Fei Li of Stanford, and many more. More details and just a few tickets left at Bloomberg.com/TechSF.